There's a scene in the Civil War movie, Gods and Generals, that reveals a great truth. The movie follows the rise and fall of a Civil War hero, General Thomas Jackson. And it doesn't try to hide his Christianity. Throughout the picture, Jackson's dependence on God is shown, but never more strikingly than in the early morning hours of July 21st, 1861, prior to the first battle of Bull Run. As the glimmers of dawn break forth, Jackson calls out to God, asking that his will be done. Almost immediately, things do not go well for the outnumbered Confederates. Union forces quickly overpowered them. The Confederate line broke. Several Confederate brigades ran to the next line of reinforcement, which was held by Jackson's brigade. Morale was all but gone as retreating soldiers swarmed Jackson's position with the Union army on their heels. But then someone yelled over the din of battle to the men, telling them to look at Jackson. At that moment, General Jackson was sitting erect in his saddle with cannon fire exploding all around him. His left hand was wounded by a musket ball. Nevertheless, he did not flinch. Word spread among the men, "Look at Jackson standing like a stone wall." Stonewall Jackson, as he would be known from that day, paced his horse back and forth across the hazardous front line, shouting orders to charge as the musket balls pierced the air. His stunning bravery stirred the men to valor, and they turned to face advancing Union forces with new resolve. At the end of the day, General Jackson returned to the battlefield to survey the losses. 111 Confederates died. 373 were missing. Weary and sad, Jackson knelt beside a dead soldier, and it was then that one of his captains asked him, "General, how is it you can keep so serene and stay so utterly insensible with a storm of shells and bullets about your head?" Jackson replied, "Captain Smith, my religious belief teaches me to feel as safe in battle as in bed. God has fixed the time of my death. I do not concern myself with that, but to be always ready, whenever it may overtake me. If this was the way of all men, and the way that all men lived, then all men would be equally brave." Stonewall Jackson was declaring his belief that God ruled over the details of his life, even the flight of bullets and shrapnel. His bravery was based on his belief that God is God, in fact, as well as in name. That he is on the throne of the universe, directing all things and working all things according to the counsel of his will. What General Jackson told his captain is, if you're a believer in Jesus Christ, if he's your Savior and Lord, you are indestructible until he's finished with you. There is nothing that can take your life until he's done with you. But when he's done with you, there is nothing that can keep you here. Amen. What a confidence that we can have knowing that truth. Let's take a look for a few moments at the sovereignty of God. The sovereignty of God, and consider the difference that believing in a God who is in control makes in our daily lives. Let's take a look at that for a moment. Let's first take a look at God's resume. We learn that, first of all, he existed before everything else. Psalm 90 in verse 2 says, "Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God." He existed before everything else. But you know what else you find on his resume? He created all things. John chapter 1 and verse 3 says, "For all things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made." Another place it says that the earth is his in all of its fullness, even the people. Even the people. Job, you remember Job? Job kind of got an attitude with God. He got an attitude with God when he began to think about the crushing blows that he was enduring in his life. And when you read about Job, you're reminded that he lost all of his possessions. He lost all of his flocks. He even lost all 10 of his children. They all died the same day. He lost everything except his wife all in the same day. And you find out that Job was starting to get an attitude with God. He was reminded that God knows the current score in the game of every person's life. And do you know why? Well, it's simply because he created the game, the field, the ball, the bat, and every player. He created it all. What a resume item. But there's another one. Not only did he exist before everything, and he created all things, but he sustains all things. Everything he created, he keeps it all going. It's not like he has to work at it. It says it's by the power of his word that he keeps it all going. He said, let there be, and because he said, let there be, there is, and it stays. What would happen if God changed his mind? Everything would be gone. But even that is a wonderful thing, because God does not change, his word says. He's immutable, unchanging. So when God says it, it is, and it stays, and it continues. Colossians chapter 1, verse 17 says, he is before all things, and in him all things consist. His power to make everything hold together instead of flying apart operates from all the way down to the smallest atomic level to the greatest universe level. That all of the little atoms and even what makes up an atom, God is involved and keeps all of those things where they need to be. And then this whole universe, as vast as it is, he keeps that all together. And he's above all things. He's not limited by anything at all. He knows all things down to the smallest details. It says in one place that the hairs on our head, which we haven't the slightest idea how many of them are, but God knows every single hair on our head. Down to the smallest detail, he knows everything. In another place it says that he can do whatever he pleases. He created it all, and he can do whatever he pleases with what he created. Isaiah tells us that he orchestrates all things. Not only did he create everything and keep everything together, but he decides how things are going to happen. And he rules over everything. King Nebuchadnezzar, one of the greatest kings that's ever lived, not only Bible history, but secular history tells us that as well. He got to the place where he was feeling pretty good about who he was and what he had accomplished. Daniel, in Daniel chapter 4, he writes about the time that the most powerful man on earth decided to take on God. When God was through with him, King Nebuchadnezzar, listen to what he said. Daniel chapter 4, verses 34 and 35. And if you remember what happened, he got to eat grass for 7 years. At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me. And I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. The one who is the greatest ruler was humbled to the place where he acknowledged that God is sovereign over his universe, over all his creation. The bottom line is, he's in control of all things. When we look at God's resume, he is in control of all things. He controls decisions by world leaders. Proverbs 21 and verse 1 says that the heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord. And like a water course, he directs it wherever he will. He controls decisions by world leaders. He controls the course of human events. He controls natural calamity. Amos chapter 3 verse 6, we look at things that happen like hurricanes and other natural calamities. We look at those things and we wonder, where is God? Well, Amos tells us where God is. In Amos chapter 3 and verse 6, he says, quoting God, he says, if there is a calamity in a city, will not the Lord have done it? When Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, God was fully in control. He either causes things to happen, or he allows them to happen by his will, by his sovereign power. He controls our circumstances. What we're doing right now, he's in control of. We don't like that sometimes, because we like to be, you know, as they say, the captain of our own ships. We like to be the ones who are in charge of our agenda. We like to be the ones who are making up our list of things to do. But it's God who's in control. It's God who controls our circumstances. You see, Stonewall Jackson believed that whether he lived to fight another day was completely in the hands of the Lord. And that's the same for you and me. Whether we wake up with the breath to live tomorrow morning is in God's hands. Where every one of us, one heartbeat away from eternity, He's in control. Do you get the picture? To say God is sovereign is to say that He is unrivaled in His majesty. He's unlimited in His power. He's unsurpassed in His knowledge. He's unaffected by anything outside of Himself. That's all we are, is affected by everything outside of ourselves. But God is unaffected by anything outside of Himself. He is outside of time and space, completely free to do whatever He wills to do, anywhere, at any time, in every single detail, without any interference. He reigns, period. And that's what it means to say that God is sovereign. Listen, when somebody you love lies in a hospital bed and you don't know what's going to happen, God is in control. When the national economy or your personal finances begin to go on the slide, God's in control. When you're all alone and the phone doesn't ring and you wonder if you're ever going to connect with another human being again, God's in control. Nothing will ever enter your life that God doesn't either permit or cause to happen. If anything touches your life, God's in control. He wants you to seek Him. He wants you to rely on Him. He wants you to wait for Him. He wants you to walk with Him. Well, that's his resume. Let's take a look at his credentials. First of all, consider his promises. Romans chapter 8, verse 28. We love that verse, don't we? Anyone can make promises, but not everyone can keep them. And God's promises can only be kept if He is who He says He is. Romans 8:28, and we know that all things work together for good to those who love God. Which things? Some of the things? All the things. All things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to His purpose. What God is promising in that verse is that He will take all the events, all the situations, all the people, the doctors, the medicines, the prayer, relationships, every detail related to whatever difficult circumstance that you're in, and create an outcome that brings about good, not only for you, but simultaneously in the lives of every person touching those circumstances who is a believer in Jesus Christ. Now that's a tall task. Do you see the complexity and the overlapping issues that come into play making that promise come to pass? All the things that have to happen? God could never stand behind that promise unless He knew everything. Unless He had unimaginable power. Unless He had created everyone and could direct the hearts of people so that they willingly choose a certain course of action and then dictate the outcome of that action. That's how complex it is for that verse to be true, that all things work together. That means every little detail that has anything to do with your circumstance, if it involves other people, whatever is involved in, God has to know everything, and He has to be able to make other people, make their hearts do certain things, and then He has to control the outcome of those actions and those words, so that it all comes to be the good that He wants to happen in your lives, and not only your lives, but their lives as well. You can't work all things together for good unless you are the sovereign King of the universe. You and I can control a few things in our lives, but we can't control things in other people's lives. We can't even control all the things in our own lives. You have to be the King of the universe in order to be able to do that. That's the God that we have. What a credential He has to be able to make a promise and then fulfill that promise. So consider His promises, but also consider His control of temptation. Like the Romans 8:28, there's another verse, 1 Corinthians 10:13, that we like to quote. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. Everybody, any temptation that we deal with, everybody deals with it. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Think about that for a moment, like thinking about the other one. Temptation is handled by God even before it reaches us. He doesn't let temptation to be more than we can handle. He limits the power of temptation and He provides an escape hatch at the same time, which means no sin is irresistible. Think for a moment what must take place behind the scenes before, during, and after temptation for God to pull this off. He must be involved on every single level. He must know the strength of our spiritual life and the specific attraction that that particular temptation has on us. He also must constantly keep a leash on Satan. He must control the temptation's power, and He must provide an alternative so that we can escape. Only a sovereign God could do that. And this is the bottom line. What difference does God's sovereignty make in my life? How does it apply? Where does the rubber meet the road in my life because God is sovereign? It's great to know that He's sovereign. Great to know that He's in control, that there's nothing that's outside of His control. But what difference does that make in my life? Let me share with you a couple of things, two or three things. First of all, God's sovereignty gives me courage to face every single day. The command that's most often repeated in the Bible is this one: fear not. On what basis should we be fearless? Jesus gives us the answer. In Matthew chapter 10, verses 29 to 31, He says, "Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin? And not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows." There are so many events and circumstances in our lives that are beyond our control. Fear and worry can haunt us. They can even paralyze us. If God's not in control, then we ought to fear. If God's not in control, then we have all reason to fear and to be afraid. But if He is there in the details, if He is there controlling, directing, and ruling them for my good, then I can have courage to live obediently for Him, following His direction. So, first of all, God's sovereignty gives me the courage to face each day. And second, God's sovereignty helps me give thanks during difficulties. 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 and 13, the apostle says, "Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you, but rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, that when His glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy." Thanks? I can give thanks in difficult circumstances? I can rejoice? Well, yeah. Because you see, there's no such thing as pain without purpose for believers. There's no such thing as pain in your life without a purpose that God has for it to be there. As difficult and as excruciatingly painful as it may be from time to time. Tragedy struck the Amish community in Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania, 2006 on October 2nd. Charles Roberts, a milk truck driver, stormed a one-room schoolhouse and shot 10 girls before killing himself. 5 of the students died, and 1, far as I know, is still in a coma to this day. 10 days after the massacre, authorities tore down the school building. Exactly 6 months later, the Amish children entered their brand new schoolhouse. On April 2nd, 2007, they took their seats at the New Hope Amish School, which is within eyesight of the former school's location. The Amish demonstrate how much they understand about handling tragedy and how much they trust God in that. Dealing with grief and showing unshakable confidence in the sovereign providence of God. From the naming of their new school, I mean, just thinking about that, even the naming of their new school demonstrates a truth about faith. Although the past may be marked with sorrow and pain, His promise of a transformed future is certain. Mike Hart, who is with the Bart Township Fire Department, had this to say about the school's opening. It's just another part of the closure process and a new beginning. God's in control. And because He's in control, we can thank Him in the middle of difficulties. We can even, as the Apostle says, rejoice, knowing that we are partaking of the same sufferings that Jesus experienced. And then finally, what difference does it make? God's sovereignty humbles me in my planning. I like to think I'm in control and that I'm the one that's directing these things. But if God's in control, then you know what? A lot of times my plans don't mean anything. They only mean something in the context of His plans, His purposes. James chapter 4 and verse 10 says, "Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and He will lift you up." It's only if He allows it that we can do even the most simple things in life. We should not take another step without considering Him. Everything that we do should be in the context of what His plans are, what His purposes are, what His desires are. Because, see, He is worthy to be trusted with every part of your life. My question is, do you trust Him with your life?